So we would make that kind of change on every page. And very soon, I lost this silly pride in authorship and had a greater concern in pride in the finished product, which was hers as well as mine. Well, that didn't hurt the marriage. That was terrifically good for the marriage, I think. So we never had a fight over the thing. And instead, we would, we would cheer sometimes and we would solve a problem like that together. How about taking this subordinate clause and introducing the sentence with it? It's, all right, how about yanking this sentence? Yanking a sentence, that's like tearing an organ out of my own body. But no, I was past that point. Sure, pull it out of there, let's see how it reads. So, in a way, my prose probably became more spare and tighter because of that. And we solved her problems and we discovered a very natural kinship between us that sewed us together even more tightly.
How would you mind sharing some of your stories from the book?
Oh, no, sure. Well, you've read it.
Yes.
So you know them all. Did you want me to read from the book to you? Or?
Oh, you don't have to. Or if you just have any favorite stories.
Well, I do. Why don't I grab a copy of it?
Oh, actually, I have it in my bag.
Oh, just happened to have it. Yes. Look at that.
The library did have it.
Oh, good, good.
Nisha did.
Here's one of my favorites about my grandparents, which you may well remember. It's called Thanks, Anna and Sam. Maybe Grandparents' Day is just the card marketer's way of making sales in slack September. But whatever the day's origin, I want to honor my grandparents Atwell and tell you about a quiet conspiracy between them. You remember little Annie Owings, who fell down a well a good many pages back in this book. Well, in 1894, Anna Owings was sent from her small Tidewater, Maryland hamlet to a finishing school in Cornwall-on-Hudson, New York. She was 17. Her father, the hamlet's grocer and postmaster, hoped that the northern schooling would lead to a good marriage, one that would distance the family still more from the local crabbers and craftsmen and farmers of Shadyside, Maryland. Instead, it led to Anna's falling in love with a college boy, to their brief engagement, to her being sent home abruptly from the boarding school. Aunt Nellie, an old dragon who lived in Cornwall-on-Hudson, discovered the engagement and blew the whistle on it. Anna, my grandmother, was heartbroken. Great-grandfather was enraged. And the other Shadysiders were delighted. Their overreaching grocer had got just what he deserved. Well, after her thwarted romance, poor Anna lived quietly at home for 7 years. Then she was given in marriage to Sam Atwell, a short, loud, bandy-legged carpenter. Her father must have ground his teeth, but Anna was already 25. Time was running out for marriage of any sort. I think they did come to love one another, though they were polar opposites. Sam was a truly good man, but a rough-cut chewer of tobacco on construction sites and a smoker at home of harsh cigars. He was zestfully, imaginatively profane. And when I think of visiting them, I can still hear Grandma's pained voice, "Sam, please don't swear in front of the boy." For though her finishing school time had been cut short, Anna still aspired to refinement in every way, in speech, in deportment, dress, and certainly, according to her lights, in home decoration. I remember their living room as curtained and dim, filled with brass knick-knacks, furnished with sofa and chairs so overstuffed they looked drowned and bloated. They were covered in maroon plush, prickly to the legs of a small boy in short pants. Grandpa Sam had his own easy chair in the corner, next to a huge Stomberg Carlson cabinet radio. When I ran from our house to theirs in the evenings, I'd always find Grandpa settled there, puffing clouds of acrid smoke out into the listening to John Charles Thomas sing The Lost Chord or Danny Boy. Grandma would be in a chair across the room, at the far edge of the cloud, trying to enjoy the music and ignore the smoke. I'd kiss her and then run to climb into Sam's lap, snuggling low to keep out of the way of his arm as it pivoted the cigar from mouth to brass ashtray and back again. At some point during those visits, Grandma would always get up and go out to the kitchen. I just spotted a typo in this book. Never mind. And go out to the kitchen, perhaps just to get some fresh air. When she'd left, I'd wordlessly raise my hand, index, and forefinger parted, and Sam would place the smoldering cigar between them. I'd put the soggy end in my mouth and sit, puffing wickedly, flicking ashes into the tray, trying to blow the perfect smoke rings Grandpa did. Then we'd hear Grandma Anna coming back. Sam would whisper, "Quick, boy!" And I'd slip the cigar back into his blunt, callous fingers. When Grandma quietly took her seat again, we were as when she left. I hunkered down in Sam's lap, he puffing away, relishing the best G.D. baritone on God's green earth. "Sam," she'd say wearily, "not in front of the boy." She never knew about my smoking that cigar. I thought that for years, until Grandpa was long dead and Anna late in her 80s. Then, a grown man, I was sitting one evening with her in the living room. Over the decades, the cigar smell had finally faded. At her side, on that same plush couch, I confessed, "Grandma, remember when I used to sit on Grandpa's lap and we'd listen to John Charles Thomas?" She smiled and nodded in reminiscence. "Well, back then, when you'd go out of the room for something, Grandpa used to let me puff on his cigar. It wasn't a trick on you, just something he and I shared. I loved doing it." She placed a veined hand on top of mine. The wedding ring Sam gave her hung loose on her thin finger. "Why," she asked, "do you think I went out of the room?" Isn't that wonderful? They had that little conspiracy between them, for my benefit, just so I could have that wicked fun. And she was willing to go out there and stand in the kitchen for a while. Almost every time I went over there. So, that's a story that's dear to me because they were so dear to me. Is that enough, or did you...
Oh, if you have any more you'd like to share.
Oh, well, all right. Let me see what else is here. Well, here's Anne's and my marriage, which took place beyond the barn. You can't see the spot here, but out in that lovely big field that extends out behind it. Two mornings after Anne's and my perfect wedding, I woke up with a rotten head cold, clogged nose, sore throat, the works. How's that for knocking the edge off romance? So far, Anne hasn't caught it from me. But imagine the ways it has compromised our togetherness. On second thought, don't. Never mind, the wedding was perfect. It was a bridge to essentials. Couple, minister, two witnesses. We wanted an intimate ceremony, so we told our friends we were eloping. And elope we did. But not far. Only to the hayfield beyond the barn and the sheep shed. I'd mowed a bridle path to a high spot in the field, and cut a 12-foot circle there. We edged its south side with an arc of potted mums, and Anne and I stood there on a sunny autumn afternoon, facing the Reverend John Blackman of Edmiston. Beyond him spread the waving grass, edged by reddening sumac and dark woods, and domed by a cloudless sky. Reverend John and I had gone first to the site, to await the two-person bridal procession from the house. With us was best man Ari Hecox, buttoned tight in a dark wool suit and wearing his all-purpose scowl. Ari and John and I waited in the mood circle, but then I stationed myself where the path met the back lawn, watching for the procession. And there it came. First Anne's cousin Joan, carrying a small bouquet. Joan couldn't abide a wedding procession without music, and so in a soft, lovely soprano, she sang a Scottish air as they walked slowly down the green lawn, under the butternut and the larch, past the red barn and the yard of curious chickens. Behind her came Anne, who stopped my breath with an outfit I hadn't been allowed to see, a fitted silk jacket of aubergine, as I was later told, more aubergine and ochre in her skirt, and even an aubergine ribbon in her golden straw hat. She was carrying a bouquet bright with golds and wheats and whites and accented with sprigs of Scottish heather. She was smiling radiantly. I'm glad Joan was doing the singing. It would have been beyond me. I could barely breathe. Anne took my arm. We walked down the path to the circle and stood before John, my good friend of 25 years. Joan read Psalm 104, celebrating all creation as we stood in its bright midst. And Ari Hecox, tough, crusty, and deeply devout, read the Beatitudes with an eloquence that made my eyes brim. Vows were spoken, rings exchanged. And contrary to his threat, Ari didn't deliberately drop Anne's ring in the grass, so I'd have to hunt for it on hands and knees. "Then you'd remember your wedding," he said. John pronounced us married, and it was done. Back to the house we went, for tea, coffee, and a Canadian wedding tradition, rich fruitcake with marzipan icing. You'll remember that my bride was born in Calgary, Alberta. Supper that night was by candlelight at Cooperstown's Otisaga Hotel. Newlyweds and witnesses were joined by Peg Famular and Maxine Potts, both of them close Fly Creek friends. We sat in the vast dining room before the handsome fireplace. Harry Hecox's opening blessing carried enough spiritual wattage to sanctify the whole hotel. There were toasts and good wishes. Our friends talked and laughed through a delicious meal, and Anne and I sat in wonder that what we'd been waiting for had finally happened. Then our friends went home to their beds, and we to ours. And 2 mornings later, I woke up with that rotten cold. What a start to a wedding. "Not to worry," said my bride. "You and I vowed for better or worse. We're just getting the worst out of the way first thing." As I've said, she's my kind of woman. How's that?
That's great.
Okay. Well, it's a good life I'm leading out here, as you can see.
Yeah.
And whatever compromises the sickness has brought are compromises and no more, and are adjusted to. And if anything, and it sounds silly to say it or crazy, they're enrichments to our life together and our life in this community, because Fly Creek has mobilized in support of us. We don't have to even wish for a thing before people jump to help us out. Lots of jobs that I can't do outside anymore, people are coming and doing for us. That's community. See, that's a community sewn together the way it's supposed to be. So I guess that was the theme of what I had to say today, this idea of community and discovering it and nurturing it and furthering it. And that's successful out in this little place, I think. One of the great successes of recent years was the reestablishment of the fire department. The fire department, and this was all our fault, had gradually settled into the hands of 2 single families who not only supplied most of the firemen, but who were members of the Fire Board of Commissioners, which meant they were in charge of themselves. This is never, never a good thing. Finally, a brave young man out here named Mark. Oh, God, his name's gone out that happens more and more, you see. Well, Mark, I'll call him for now. Applied for membership on the board, ran for election, and won a position by a huge majority because everybody knew this had to change. Well, that poor guy was battered and belabored by those other people who realized what was starting to happen to their control. I don't know how he survived. But then finally, the president of the board quit, leaving a vacancy. Another member quit, leaving another vacancy. And there was an election, and Fly Creek turned out. I've never seen so many people turn out for a local election. And they brought enough new members onto that board that the balance tipped. And suddenly, the new folks were in control. And most of the old folks quit out of disgust. And mind you, they not only quit, but they stripped the firehouse of as many elements of his past as they could. They took down all the pictures. They took all the trophies went over the years. And we don't know where they are. They're stored in somebody's basement now, instead of speaking to the continuity department. Well, the new leadership took over. A bunch of new firemen joined up. We've just been waiting for this bunch of ne'er-do-wells to get out of the way, including the fire chief, who was an absolute tyrant. And suddenly there was this renaissance. And now we've got lots of new firemen, we've got some new fire equipment. We had to change the name from Fly Creek Fire Department to Fly Creek Fire Company just to create a legal separation from these bozos and what they've done, including spend prodigally a lot of money given in donation to the fire department by grateful people in the community. I mean, it was just cries to heaven for vengeance. But that's past history. And now we've got this great department that's thrown the firehouse open, and we're having dinners there and receptions after funerals, and it's become a community center again instead of this private boys club that it was for years and years. And the community is proud of them and proud of what they've done here. In this kind of setting, you see, there are far fewer fire calls than there are first responder calls. Somebody's fallen and broken a leg. Somebody's had a heart attack. Somebody's had a stroke. And the old bunch had dropped that service completely. They didn't want to be bothered with it. They sat around waiting for something to catch fire, and that's about all they did. Next to nothing. So now the whole community feels safer, especially the older members. You know, that if they make a call, they'll have help. Ann fell down the steps in this house last year. That God didn't break anything, but she came all the way down the steps on the base of her spine. And of course, we couldn't let her move. I called 911 in 2 minutes. The first of the first responders arrived. Because ahead of their vehicles, even, these guys and gals had driven here in their own cars. And suddenly this house was flooded, not just with skilled professionals, but people we knew, friends. And Anne looked up and said, "Please get me a box of Kleenex. I can't help crying at the sight of this." And suddenly all these good people were attending to her. One was holding her head steady just in case something had happened to her neck or spine. And this was Wolf Merkin. He was lying on his stomach, his feet extending into her kitchen, holding her head steady, while the others were checking her out very, very carefully, joking with her, talking with her, but professional every step of the way. And they got her onto a cot, and then they lifted her up, and they got that onto a gurney. And by that time, the Cooperstown Fire ambulance arrived. And a whole bunch of more people that we knew came running into our house. And they picked her up, got her out there, got her to the emergency room. And we got in there to the company of a bunch more people we knew. Two or three doctors who lived here in Fly Creek would come over and say, "Anne, what are you doing in here? What have you done to yourself?" It was splendid. And I just, as worried as I was that whole time, I was rejoicing and living in a place like this. All of these good people around us. And the best news is it turned out she hadn't broken her spine or anything. She was terribly sore for weeks and weeks and weeks. But when I think back across our life together here, that day rises just as a symbol of what good country life can be. So that's a good story for you to know, too.
That's great.
And for other people who might listen to this tape. Because that interests me, that this tape is going to go into the archives, right? Which means that 50 years hence, somebody may be listening to you and me, long dead, even you by that time, perhaps. Though, no, you'll only be in your 70s then. Healthy, prosperous 70s.
I hope so.
Yeah, but I'll be dust in the Fly Creek Cemetery. But I'd like you people of the future to know what a spectacular place this is just now. And part of the spectacular nature of it is that it has not lost its past. It's held on as best it can to its institutions and to its sense of community. And I hope you folks, young and old, a half a century in the future, will be struggling just the same way and just as successfully. So there.
Great. Well, is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
Oh, gosh, I don't think so. There are endless stories that have appeared in those columns, of course, and they will appear, I hope, in future columns. But the column this week, just came out this morning, is about the reopening of this restaurant up there, which is another, point of focus for the community. It's not just a place to go and eat. It's a comfortable place. Wonderful old antique chairs and tables, wonderful walls of weathered wood, high ceiling, and welcoming people. You go in there, and your neighbors are in there having breakfast or having lunch, and you end up staying much longer than you intended to enjoy their company as well as the food. Well, that's community tying together. Those people will cross the street another time to go in the general store, or go over into Portobello's, or go up to the post office, or go up to the church. And there is all that weaving going on, you see, pulling the community closer together. So we have something to celebrate in that new, renewed restaurant, too. Is this your copy or the museum's?
Oh, it's the library's copy.
Oh, library's, yeah. Oh, great. Well, why don't I do this? Why don't I give you a copy of that book and autograph it for you?
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
In case you'd like to keep it.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I'll go get one. Now, tell me how I should autograph this. To?
I guess just a cat.
C-A-T?
K-A-T.
K-A-T! Oh, yes. Isn't that nice? So it's Catherine? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a beautiful one. That was my mother's name. We have another friend named Cat C-A-T.
Oh.
Cat Gareth. Delightful woman. Sign this too, since her work is so prominent in it. Let me show you my favorite of her illustrations. Well, there's the cholesterol of the pig with that wonderful half smile that pigs always have, you know. That's just the way their mouths are shaped, but it makes them look so pleasant. I'm looking for the one of Ari.
Yeah, I loved reading about him.
Oh, he was... I mean, the stories I have still to tell about him are endless. Mary, where are you? Well, I'll let you find it on your own. There he is. Is that not a grand-looking old man?
Oh, it is.
Well, here is your book.
Thank you so much.
And feel free to share it with others. Oh, definitely. Tell them it's still for sale. They want their very own copy. At Augers and, well, down at Borders Express and, of course, at the general store and on Amazon.com.
If yes.
You want to go there. Well, this has been great fun.
Thank you so much for having me in your home. Welcome.
Now, do you have a series of these that you have to do, or is this...
Yep, just this one.
I'm your one and only.
Oh, yep.
Great. Well, how fine that fate brought us together.
I know.
And again, the names were supplied by the Baptist Church in... Mm-hmm. Isn't that by the pastor there?
Not sure.
Who's a friend of mine, Doug Deere, so maybe that's it. But, well, great. Well, I hope the other interviewers have as much fun.
I hope so, too.
How many in your class?
There are 14 of us.
Oh, fine, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be interested in the outcomes when things shape up. And
excellent.
So if there is some kind of gathering, mm-hmm. I'd be honored to come to it.
I believe it's December 13th at 2:30. Mm-hmm.
2:30, all right.
But I'll notify you of
an
official date.
All right, that'd be great.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to get to know you. I wish you much success. You're going to try to get a museum job, of course, at the end. And
yep.
It's pointless to say where, because I think what you have to say is where I can get one. But I've known so many people who've gone through that program, and I just admire it so, really. I think it's just an ornament to the area to have something like that being presented. It's an amazing area, isn't it, when you think about it?
Yeah.
Way out here in the country, and yet there's such an intellectual richness in the area, such a cosmopolitan spirit for being way out in the country. Mm-hmm. And of course, most of that flows from old money being very well spent on the community, like the Clark money especially.
Mm-hmm.
But the Anheuser-Busch money too. Comes in very handy. And it's made for a community that has all the virtues of country life we've been talking about. And yet, this spectacular hospital and this wonderful sports center that's of great use to me now in water therapy, just riches us. An opera house out here. And yet you've got productions being critiqued not only in the New York Times, but the London Times, mind you. Cooperstown, New York, appearing in the London Times. That's good.
Great. Well, thank you again.
Well, thank you. Great fun. And I'm sorry the dog gave you such a loud welcome, but...
Oh, no.
He does that for everybody.